Please help me welcome our speaker tonight. It's Joe from The Way Out Group in Roselle, New Jersey.
Oh, that's cool. All eyes on me. I'm Joe. I'm an alcoholic. Did a lot of drugs, too. A ton of them. Thank you. Everybody hear me?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Thank you guys for inviting me out and asking me to speak on a Monday night at 8 o'clock, 100 miles from my house. I need to find ways to demonstrate willingness on a daily basis, and this was the perfect opportunity for me to do that. So thank you. And the other thing I heard was Harvey. When you guys talked about passing that basket for the people down there, that's very thoughtful. You know, it's nice to see a group that's present and like aligning themselves with like conscious awareness of what's going on in the world and taking action to help people. Like, that's really cool. So I quit smoking about 6 months ago. And 6 months ago, this suit fit a whole lot better. You know, it did. I gained like 40 pounds, and so if my eyes pop out of my skull during my speech, just put them back in gently and just tell me to keep talking. I'm good at that. And thank Jeff for traveling out on a Saturday night to come see us. Like, he brought a really good message, and glad you guys are here, man. I'm glad I'm here. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been coming to meetings since I was 5 years old. With grandma and mom, and well, I didn't get to go to meetings with my grandfather. He died before I got to meet him, but he was chairing one of the first meetings in Brooklyn. I'm from New York, if you guys can't recognize the accent, but I moved to Jersey about 20 years ago, so it's like, you'll get confused, especially when I say squirrel. See, it's not funny, you know, it's two syllables, squirrel, you know what I'm saying? I've been coming to AA for a long time, and my grandfather, like I said, he chaired one of the first meetings that ever took place in Brooklyn, and, you know, he was going to meetings, and he was doing okay for a while. I guess they asked him to chair the meeting, and what happened was he had left that meeting one day, and he wasn't feeling too good, and he was sober, but I guess that wasn't enough for him, and he bought a bottle of something, and he went into an abandoned building, and he started drinking it, and he fell asleep with a cigarette in his hand, and the mattress caught fire, and he died. You know, it runs rampant in my family. It doesn't make me alcoholic, but it does run rampant in my family. My aunt, she celebrated 90 meetings in 90 days. She met a guy in AA. They were from same rehab or something. And she went out on the 91st day, and she OD'd and died. My grandmother, I was confused too. She had 17 years in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like she didn't work the program. You know, like, she, you know, here are the steps we took, which are suggested as the program. Like, she wasn't in the program. She was in the fellowship. And she had 17 years in the fellowship, went to probably thousands of meetings. So she went all the time. And same thing, sobriety, just being dry and not drinking, just wasn't enough for her. And at 17 years, she went back out and she was dead in four. My Uncle Ed, I'm going to tell you about me eventually, I promise. You know, but my Uncle Ed, and I try to tell these stories for a reason. There's purpose behind what I talk about today. I happen to be awake, and for the most part, most of the time. My Uncle Ed, he had, like me at one time, he had seven and a half years in the fellowship, right? I used to go to meetings with him, too, all the time when I was a kid. And he got so sick with, you know, that what we get sick with, that untreated alcoholism, that restlessness, that irritability, that discontent, that anxiety, that depression, that resentment. He got so sick inside that at seven and a half years without a drink in the fellowship, he went home one day and he tried to kill his wife and commit suicide. And he He failed at both, and he went back out drinking, and he was out there for 5 years, and he came back in, and same thing. He said he knows what he's got to do, right? Like, we hear that all the time when we come, I know what I got to do. I just got to do it, right? And so he came back in, and he did the exact same thing for the exact same time, 7.5 years. And he went to his doctor, right? We say, listen to your doctor. He went to his doctor, who knew he was alcoholic. And he said, the doctor said, Ed, your heart, you had a few heart attacks. You need to start drinking a glass of wine each day. I swear to God. So my uncle says, okay, right? And what happened is, like, my uncle's alcoholic. He can't drink a glass of wine a day. So he tried doing that. He's currently, he left his new wife and family, and he's currently cooped up in a hotel room somewhere in Maryland. Like, he's off and on. He's a mess, you know. And that was my experience too, man. I came into AA, I don't know, I wasn't too young, but I wasn't done, you know. Like, when I came in, I was 24 years old. Booze was still working great. You know, like, there were some substances that weren't working so good anymore, but booze was like my constant. It was always there. And, like, no matter what was going on in my life, no matter how I felt, high, low, good, bad, good looking, ugly, like, it didn't matter. Whatever was going on, I'd take a few drinks and I get that, you know, that just, I'm okay, right? And I can get through whatever I got to get through, whether it's a Christmas party or a funeral. It doesn't make a difference. If I take a few drinks, it just produces that sense of ease and comfort that I've been longing for my whole life, right? And when I came in, when I was 24 years old, like, that was still working. Like, every time I took a drink, like, I was getting into trouble, right? Circumstances were piling up. But that was still working. That was still going good for me. But because of the circumstances, and I'm different, and I'm, you know, better or dumber, or something. Like, I don't know what that, but I know I'm different, right? Because of the circumstances, like, I was with my wife, and I just had my son, and he was 8 months old, and you know, she was like, Joe, if you don't stop drinking, I'm taking your son. She's Colombian. She's like, I'm moving to Colombia, and you'll never see us again, right? I just failed the drug test for another job. I was off work for a little while. I got a new job, and I was working there for a week. And my boss said, Joe, you've been working here for a week, and you already smell like you showed up kind of drunk twice. I was like, you missed the other three times. Like, I was drunk. Like, I don't not drink, you know? So he was like, if you don't straighten yourself up, he's like, I'm going to have to let you go. And we were, like, way behind in the rent. Like, things were bad. So I made a decision, and I said, that's it. Like, I know what alcoholics do. They go to meetings, right? So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to meetings, and I did, and it wasn't bad. I had the ego size of Mount Olympus, you know? It's like, I remember the first meeting I walked into, there was this big billboard, like this wooden cardboard poster of Bill and Bob, right? And I was like, in like 6 months, they're going to be putting my face right next to those guys. Like, I'm telling you. There was two things I didn't want to do, though. Like, one was pray, because I was just like, oh, like, right? And the other one was do this, like, get up at the podium. I was like, I'm never doing that. Like, I can't even talk to my friends, you know? Like, I'm a nervous wreck talking to my friends, talking to people I'm comfortable with. Like, I can't go up in front of a room full of people and not just, like, fall apart, you know? So I was like, that I'm not going to do. And, but, you know what, man? Like, my whole life, I'm living my life through your eyes, right? So I see myself through you. So I see things. You know, I'm not stupid. I'm not smart either. I thought I was, though. I had a spiritual awakening and realized I ain't as smart as I thought I was. I swear to God. First, I tried to pawn it off on the drugs. I was like, oh, it's burned brain cells. I used to be really smart. I was never that smart. I was never that smart. I really wasn't. You know, I'm observing my life through your eyes, and what I'm seeing is, like, you know, like, some people are, like, big on the steps and, like, big on getting a sponsor. So I'm like, okay, I'll do that, because I, you know, same like always, I want you to like me. I want you to think I'm cool. I want you to think I'm smart. I want you to think I'm funny. So I'll do whatever it is I think you want me to do. So I get a sponsor, right? And we pretend to go through, I pretend to go through the steps for him, right? Like, you know, he's like, oh, you know, we go through the first step. Like, man, I tell you guys this, man, it's one thing and it's big for me, man. Like, I spent 7 years in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I would raise my hand. I went to over 2,000 meetings, and I would raise my hand at every meeting, and I would say, I'm Joe, I'm alcoholic. And I had no clue what that was. Like, I swear to God, like, I had this preconceived idea of what alcoholic was, and I definitely wasn't it. Like, what I thought alcoholic was that guy Curly. I'm from Queens, the guy Curly from Queens, right? Like, he was this white dude, and he had dreads, like these nasty dreads, and there was like, there were seagulls like flying over him. He was like, he had this brown trench coat, and he had a, you know, a paper bag with a bottle in it, and he was always talking to himself, and he was always pushing a shopping cart, you know. And I'm like, that's alcoholic, right? And yet maybe, like, if I keep on, like, I'll be like that, but I definitely ain't like that now. Right, and that was my understanding of what it meant to be alcoholic. And on that basis, why would I need to really do the steps? Right, I don't have to. I'm different, and so I didn't. But I talked a lot, you know. So I pretended like I did, you know. I didn't know what being honest was. Like I didn't get the concept. It made no sense to me. My father used to tell me when I was a kid, he would be like, Joe, stop, you're lying. Be honest. I'm like, why? I could lie and get what I want. Why would I tell the truth? Stupid. Right? It's ridiculous. Like, be a man of honor. I'm not a Marine. Like, what are you talking? Like, I don't know what honor is, but I'm afraid to ask. This was before Google, right? Like, I didn't know. Like, I have some tattoos on my arms, like humility and loyalty. Like, I thought they were names of spaceships when I got them. Like, I had no clue what they were. And I'm so afraid to ask, because I'm so afraid you're going to find out the truth. And the truth is, I don't know nothing. But I'll pretend to. I'll pretend really hard, you know, and I'll do the best I can. I remember doing it as a kid, man. I suffered from alcoholism and this I don't know if it's a human or a spiritual or an ego malady way before I picked up a drink, man. I grew up with mom, and mom's a drunk too, you know, like, she's still out there. It's cool for her. Like, she don't have to spend much money anymore because the liver shot. So she drinks a six-pack and she's wasted. I'm like, why couldn't that happen to me? You know, like, I'm spending so much dough. And it's but yeah, that's her life today. You know, but I grew up with her, and she was like an IV drug user for years. And I remember being 5, 6 years old, and I woke up. We lived in a room for rent, and we had a bathroom that we shared with like 7 other alcoholics or drug addicts on that floor. It was in Queens, and I'd wake up in the middle of the night, 5, 6 years old, and I'd go into the kitchen, and I'd see mom like with her wrist cut, you know, and I was a codependent Al-Anon before I was alcoholic, you know, like, so, like, what do I do? Like, I try to fix it, right? So I hide the needles, and I hold her wrist, and I call her. We had the thing. The phone, and I call 911, and they would come, and they would find the needles, and they would take mom away, and they would make her okay, and she would come back. And a couple months later, again, same thing. Like, I wake up in the middle of the night and a wrist cut. Another time, how it works, it talks about, I'm going to jump around just a little bit, is we have to give up on our old ideas, right? So what's my old ideas, right? I was 4. This was before she did the wrist cut and stuff. I remember being 4 years old, and I'm sleeping on his couch bed, and I wake up in the middle of the night. And it was the first time I woke up in the middle of the night that she wasn't there, but she wasn't there, man. And it was, I was like petrified. I was this little kid. I had this overactive imagination. I thought there was this fire-breathing dragon outside my window. I later married that fire-breathing dragon. No. She married the fire-breathing. She married me. But I remember being so scared, and I lifted up the couch, the back of the couch bed, and I went in there and I hid, and And I tell you guys, it felt like I was there for a couple of weeks. You know, it was probably an hour, you know, but I was a kid, and time flies when you're young, or time doesn't fly when you're young. And when she came home, like, to a point, this is to an end, this story. When she came home, I was so upset, and I was so shaken up, and I did what any normal kid in that situation would probably do. I expressed myself. I told her how it made me feel to wake up and her not be there. And I asked her with every fiber of my being, please don't ever do that to me again. And she looked at me dead in the eyes, not knowing she had alcoholism, not knowing that she can't make that choice. And she swore to me that she never would, just like I did to my kids 100 times, right? She doesn't know that she has a mental obsession. She doesn't know that she has a physical allergy to alcohol, that once she starts drinking, she can't stop. She don't know that she makes a decision to stop, means it with every fiber of her being, loves her kid more than just as much as any other parent loves their kid. But she can't do that. She can't stay stopped. She's alcoholic. So she don't know. So she makes that decision. I'm convinced, right? And what happened was, a couple weeks later, I wake up in the middle of the night and she was gone. She did it again. You know, and the reason I talk about it is because it's kind of like my first old idea that I had to let go of. And the old idea was that, like, if I can't trust mom, right, like the person who's supposed to be there for me before anybody else, right, the one that's supposed to love me the most and I'm supposed to trust, if I can't trust her, I'm done. Like, I ain't never trusting anybody ever again. Like, I'm finished. So that's what I did. Like I shut off. I detached, like, emotionally. I didn't know I was doing it at the time, but I did because it hurt too much. Because I put myself out there. I told her how I felt, and then she hurt me, and she couldn't do any better. I know that today. I didn't know that then. You know, I thought she chose booze over me, right? So what happened was, I'm walking through life with this idea. You know, this I can't let anybody in. I can't trust anybody. I can't let you know how I feel, because if I do, you could hurt me. So I'm isolated. I'm on this island that this is 5, 6, 7 years old, right? But I'm going around in life and I'm going into school and I want your attention. I want you to like me. I want you to think I'm cool. I want you to think I'm funny. So I become this actor, right? Automatically, like I'm already living my life through your eyes, right? So I see, like, you like, so Johnny pulled Susan's hair. So if I pull Susan's hair, you'll laugh just like you laugh when Johnny. So I start pulling girls' hairs. Like I start. You like guys like who break windows. So I'm breaking every window in Richmond Hill. You know, it's like you like guys who are class clowns. You like guys who are funny. So, like, I'm going, this is 6, 7 years old. Like, I'm going home practicing things that I'm going to say tomorrow to make you laugh so that you'll like me, right? And it works. Great. Like, you love me. You think I'm awesome. And I'm like, yeah, right? And it lasts for a little while. And just like everything else, even your attention gets old to me. Right? If you're not praising me 100% of the time, you suck, right? And I suck, right? So what happens is I start seeing, and I don't know, like, what's going on at the time. I don't know it's like this, you know, sickness I have inside. I don't know that it's just something that's, no matter what I get, it's not enough. I don't know that I'm missing a piece of myself. I don't know that I detach emotionally. So I start seeing things funny, and I start seeing, like, this guy's not even half as funny as me. But you're laughing harder at his jokes than you are at mine, right? The anxiety, the restlessness, the discontentment, the resentment, the depression. Like, I start, like, bugging out, like, my eye. Like, I was getting afraid that you were going to figure out who I really was. So I'm ducking in. Like, I heard things when I was a kid, like, the eyes are the windows to the soul. So I can't look at you in the eyes, right? Because then you might figure out what's going on behind them. You know, anxiety. This resentment, like I want to secretly destroy the kids in my class that are funnier than me. Like, I do. Like, if they're getting any more attention, you should die. Like, really, 7, 10, it doesn't matter, right? And the depression, the discontentment, like, I don't know what it is, but what it really is, it's loneliness. Like, I could be in a room full of people who, my family, they love me. But I'm not letting them in. I'm not letting them know what's going on inside of me. So, like, I'm alone. Like, I'm discontent. I'm depressed. And what happens is I find booze like 3-4 years later. I had made another decision that I was, you know, I was never going to drink. I was never going to be like mom. But like that feeling inside, that discontentment, that unhappiness got so overwhelming. Like I was looking for escapes. You know, I was looking to get out of myself. I love stealing. Like stealing was great. I loved it. If you had it and I wanted it, it's mine, right? Like that. I love to steal because it took me out of myself. It took me out of how I was feeling inside, but it's not enough. It's not enough. And that's when I found booze. It was just awesome. Like I remember the feeling, man. It was like, finally, I'm not living my life through your eyes anymore. Finally, I'm just free to behave and talk and say and do whatever I want. And it's like, you like me even better when I'm drinking. It's like I know exactly what to say to girls. I know exactly what to say to guys. I can express myself. It feels like that emotional side that I disconnect, it just comes out and I'm just able to be whole for the first time. And of course I'm going to run into problems as a result of drinking, especially the way I drink, because that's how I drink. I don't normally talk about a lot of this stuff, but it's funny, man. I remember I was 13, 14 years old and we were having a keg party in Forest Hills and in Forest Park. And there was this girl, Charlene, and her sister. Like, Charlene was dating one of the guys, so I couldn't date her. I wanted to, but couldn't. But Charlene's cousin was from Long Island, was coming to this keg party, and I'm like, this is it. Like, she's got to be hot. Like, she's Charlene's cousin, you know? And it was like, and I had this whole plan, I swear. And I don't know her name. I would tell you if I did. But I was like, she's got to be hot. And the plan was, like, I'm going to, you know, have some drinks, and it's going to work. Like, no matter what, I'm going to get her for sure. Because if I get booze in me, I'm good. Like, I can do anything. I'm Superman. So what happened was I had a few too many, and Charlene's cousin came, and I hooked up with her, and we, you know, we were kissing. I was 12. I think I was 12, actually, not 14. And we were kissing, and we had a great time. And she ended up going home, and I was in love. I was like, this girl is awesome. Like, she had this perfect complexion. She was, Charlene is Italian, so she was Italian. So she was just awesome. And so I got her number, and I said, I'm going to come see you next week. And me and my buddy went out there to see her. We took, like, 3 buses to get to Long Island. It was way out in Long Island, felt like. And we get there, and this Asian girl with acne opens up the door. And I said, where's whatever her name is, Charlene's cousin? She's like, it's me. And I swear to God, like, that's not even alcoholism. My first thought was, I need a drink to get her looking the way she was when the night of the cake. And that's what I did. And I tried to steal some stuff from her house, and it's just, she kicked me out. But, you know, booze had always done for me what I couldn't do for myself, man. It had always done for me what I couldn't do for myself. We talk about the promises. Those came true in my life as a result of alcohol, man. Like, it was magical. So I encountered some problems at 24. Like, she wanted to leave and take my kid. My boss was threatening to fire me. I had a DUI. I lost my relationships, like, with friends because they were tired of me stealing from them and screwing with their girlfriends. So, like, they kind of fell out of my life. But booze was still working. It was still producing that effect. So when I came into AA, of course I'm going to half measure. It was the best I could do. Like, I hear people talk about in AA, like, it's not a program for people who want it. It's a program, or it's not a program for people who need it. It's a program for people who want it. Like, I wanted what you had. You know, I definitely needed it. But I didn't do it because I didn't think I had to, right? And thank God I did, you know. It's a thank God I didn't do it because you know, I was running around meetings for a long time, and I just started getting sicker. Like, I started getting that feeling. The newness of meetings was great. Like, you guys were sharing things that I thought I only thought about. You were sharing things that I thought I only felt about. And it was cool in the beginning. It was like, wow, like, you feel like I do. You think like I thought I was alone in this world. Like, I was starting to get that identification, and it was awesome because it was new. But then it started to get old, just like everything else. And it's like, oh, man, here's this guy Tom again talking about those 2 cops he beat up in 1927, you know? And it's like, and then this guy always got to one-up him because he beat up 6 cops in 1984, right? And then what's-her-name complaining about the dog crapping on the cat, you know? And it's like, and it wasn't them,
like that. They were always sharing that. I don't know if they were, but like, but it, when it was new, when I'm not suffering from this internal condition, I love what you got to say. You know, it's just like I love life. I love going to work every day. Like when I'm not suffering internally from this untreated sickness I got. But when I suffer from it, like my I get this faulty perception, man, and just everything starts to suck. The fellowship starts to suck. My life starts to suck. My kids suck. My dog sucks. Everything sucks. You know, I was physically sober, so on paper my life got really good. Like I started a business, I built it up to 100 guys. I made a couple million bucks. I had everything you would want, like anything you could ever want, like materially, I had it. Like if you from your eyes, if you're looking out, and that's what I was trying to do unconsciously, I had it all, and I'm dying inside. I'm getting a little sicker and sicker each day. The big book talks about it good on page 52. Like I'm having trouble with personal relationships. I can't control my emotional nature. I'm a prey to misery and depression. I have this feeling of just uselessness. Like newcomers would come to me, "Hey Joe, I need some help." I'd like pat them on the back, "Keep coming, buddy. Fake it till you like." It's what I had. It's what I had. And you know, secretly, when the veil of the delusion was lifted, I felt like crap about that. Like I couldn't be of real use to anybody. And I got so sick that I went to this business deal one day and I told them, they told me they were going to give me 30% more than what I was making. You know, and I was already in seven figures. So I was like, cool. Like, you know, when I woke up that morning, if you would ask me if I would ever take a drink again, I would tell you you're out of your mind. I'd stake my kid's life on it. You know, I went into this business deal. I'm depressed. I'm thinking about jumping off the bridge every day when I cross it, but drinking was never a part of my thinking. You know, like you branded that into me. I can't drink. Like, I get it. But I left that business deal, and I went back to get into the Lincoln Tunnel in my brand new Cadillac Escalade, and I stopped at this bodega on the corner right before the bridge. And I walked into the bodega and I bought a Corona and a brown paper bag and I got back in my truck and I used the seatbelt to, right? And I drank it. And after I drank it, I thought about it. Like I was like, holy crap. Like my consciousness, whatever I had at that time, asked my mind. And it was like, what did you do? Right? And my mind, like, I don't know, my mind has a disease in the center of it, so it lies to me on a regular basis. So my mind tells me, Joe, you chose to do that. And because it's my mind, I believe it. I'm like, I did? And it says, yeah, you chose to do that. You don't really love your kids. And I'm like, I don't? Nah, you're right. Right? And boom, like, looking back on it, alcohol saved my life that day, man. Like, if I was walking around with that kind of sobriety for any longer, man, like, I would have definitely killed myself. I would have killed somebody else. Like, I was angry. My sponsor would tell me all the time, and it used to piss me off because I thought I hid it so well. He would say, Joe, you're so angry. And I'd be like, what are you talking about? Like, right? But he knew me, you know? He spent enough time with me. And I was gone for about 5 years, just like my uncle. And, you know, in my mind, I had done AA. That don't work. You know, I had plenty of dough, so I started burning through that. It took me a few years to do that. I told that company I don't need them anymore. I got involved in selling some other, I got involved in pharmaceutical sales, you know, freelance, of course. And Chuck got me. And that was going really well until it wasn't, you know. And then I had some New York, New Jersey Narcotics Task Force 24-hour surveilling me. That's the feds were looking into me, and I had to skip town. And I had, my daughter, Christina, she was 9, and my son was like 11, and I kissed him on the head, and I said goodbye. Like, I'm gone. Like, I can't do 20 years. You know, I was facing some real serious stuff. And I got in my car and I drove to Oregon, you know, and I had a girl there, you know, I had it planned out already, and I had her there, she had her two kids, and I kind of moved in with them, and things were going okay for a while. Like, the drugs, they had stopped working. Like, they just,
weren't worried. I was spending like $200-$300 a day on pills just to not get sick, you know. But still, booze was working great. It was still working. It wasn't as great as it used to, but it was still working. And it had gotten so bad within this time that, like, right towards, like, with 8 months before something happened, 8 months before that, like, I'm waiting for her. She's pregnant now with my daughter at the time. And she has these young two kids, boy and a girl, Ethan and Brooklyn. And I kind of, like, I snuck into their life. You know, like, she was married to a guy, and I broke that up. You know, like, I kind of, like, terrorized this guy. Like, I physically threw him off out of his own house, right? I told him I was going to poison his kid's mind about him. Like, I almost had him killed. Like, it was, I went to his house one night. I stabbed the tires in all his cars. Like, I was bad to this guy. And he didn't do anything, man. He was just trying to keep his kids close to him. I didn't see that at the time. I thought he was the reason that I couldn't have all my kids in the same state, you know, like, because he wouldn't let them move here because they broke up and law says you got to stay in the same, whatever. Anyway, so, you know, my routine towards the end was she takes the two kids to school at 7:30 in the morning. I go in their room, steal some money out of the piggy bank, to get up to the corner store, this Jim's Thriftway that I was talking to this young woman about a little bit at the coffee pot. And I would buy the $6 bottle of vodka. And I was thinking about, you know, when I'm sober, I'm thinking about how I abandoned my kids, how I burned my life to the ground, how I hurt everybody I love. I let down everybody in AA. I let down everybody outside of AA. I'm just, there's no going back. I got the feds on me. But I would take a swig of this $6 bottle of vodka that I stole from the money from the piggy bank to get, and it would always take it away. It would just, wouldn't take it away great, but it would make it manageable. And I remember it was one day, it was the same routine, and I get the bottle, and I run back to the house to get into the bathroom to start drinking it, and I start drinking it, and I'm halfway through the bottle in about 5 minutes, and I'm not getting that relief. Like, the unhappiest person, right? Like, wish for the end, like, when he can't imagine life with or without alcohol, that's where I was finally at. Like, I was just as sick drunk as I was when I was sober. And I wanted to die. I wanted to die. It was the only thing that always worked for me. And it didn't work anymore. I had no more out. I had no more, like, it's my best friend. It's gone. I went up to the bed that night. I prayed to aliens or the devil, like flying spaghetti, anything, like anything. Like, I was hoping that there was something out there that would hear me that would take my life. Because I didn't want to live anymore. Again, like, I tried AA, that don't work, right? I did that. That doesn't work. My whole family are a bunch of meeting makers who didn't make it because all they did was just make meetings. But I didn't know that. I thought I had done AA. And that went on for a while. And, you know, again, like, the sincerity, like, I was never really sincere in those prayers. I remember one night I was kind of sincere and dying, though, and I took a bottle of Advil, the 60 Advil PMs, and I chased it down with two bottles of NyQuil, right? That'll do the job, right? And I woke up. I swear to God, I cleaned the house. Like, I'm dead serious. Like, I had an adverse reaction to this stuff. And it was like, damn, I can't even die right. I can't even die right. Like, I can't do anything. And that went on for a little while. She kicked me out, and I came back to New York. Mom let me in for a week, and then she kicked me out. My ex-wife, she took pity on me and let me stay in the basement right around New Year's of 2014. And I remember January 6th. I was just in and out of blackouts at this time because that was the only relief. If I don't remember, like, if I just don't remember my life, that's relief. And I became physically addicted to alcohol at this time. Like, I couldn't. I was in bad shape. I became chronic alcoholic in within those last 8 months. And I remember my brother-in-law. He was one of the guys who had been working for me, and he'd flown in from Italy, and because he wasn't feeling too well, and he had, you know, medical benefits in the state of New Jersey. So he came to New Jersey, and he went to a hospital in New Jersey, and he came out a couple of days later around January 6th or January 7th, and he came with his two kids, two daughters, who love him. Like, they're my kids. I just abandoned them. Like, I'm drunk all the time. They don't want to have nothing to do with me. But his kids are in love with it. They just love their dad. He's married to this woman, and they're madly in love. And he comes to my house after coming to from the doctor from the hospital, and he hits us with it, man. He says the doctor said that his internal organs are corroded with cancer, and to get his affairs in order, he's got about 3 weeks to 3 months to live. They can't do chemo because he's already had multiple heart attacks, and he won't withstand it. It's time to go, you know, and I was still drinking. I was still drinking, and it was a crushing blow. It was a crushing blow. It was like, man, and I was pissed. I wasn't so pissed. Like, I was pissed that he couldn't live, and I couldn't die. Like, I wanted to die. It's just like kind of selfish pissed, you know, and I went into the bathroom, and I got on my knees. I think alcoholics do all their best praying in the bathrooms, you know. We just do. It's I still do it today sometimes when I eat tacos. But what happened was I got on my knees, and I did it just like I had spoken to my mom that day when I begged her to never leave me again. I got on my knees, and I said a prayer with every fiber of my being, and the prayer was this: God, please take my life and give it to my brother. Like, I don't want sobriety at this point. That was worse than drinking. And I got up off my knees, and that was like January 7th, January 8th, and January 11th, man, I came out of a blackout, and I was actually sober. And what happened was God took my life, and he gave me a brand new one. Man, like, I've been my whole life arrogant, egotistical, closed-minded. Like, I'm afraid to ask for help. I'm afraid to tell you I don't know. And it went from being that guy to a completely different guy. Like, I would call, I called up my sponsor, same guy, and I, because it wasn't what he was doing, it was what I was doing. I just wasn't present ever. And I asked him to help me, and I was prepared to do whatever he told me to do. Whatever he told me to do. He told me some crazy things to do. And I didn't want to do them up here, but my mouth said, okay. Like, he first had told me, I was 44 days sober. First he told me I have to go to every meeting and I have to give my day count. And I know a lot of people in AA. And I don't want you to know that I'm back new, you know. He knew that. So he wanted to smash my ego. So he said, announce your day. So I did it for the first 90 days. I'm Joe, I'm alcoholic, day, whatever. And, then I was 44 days doing that, right? And he told me, he said, Joe, have you ever been to rehab? I said, no. He said, I want you to go. Are you retarded? Like, I'm 44 days sober. I didn't say that, though. I swear to God, like, I don't know where this stuff came from. I'm like, okay. And I go to a 21-day program, and I see what's going on. Like, I still had the same head. Like, when I got down on my knees and I said that prayer, like, I took steps 1, 2, and 3 with every fiber of my being. I didn't know it at the time, but I did. And God entered my life, and I had a spiritual experience, but I didn't know it. I had the same mind, right? I'll forever be growing into that experience and forever be finding out what took place for the rest of my life. That's when it happened. But my mind needed to grow into that, and my heart needed to grow into that, and I needed direction to do that. So he told me to go into rehab, and I did, and I met a woman in there, and she was a counselor. She had 19 years sober at the time, and I still got this mouth, right, and I still got this head, and I still think I know something, right? And she asked me some question, and I was going to give her this great, sober, spiritual 7.5 year, out of the big book, AA answer, you know? And she stopped me, man. Like, she said, Joe, stop. She's like, shut up. And I'm like, I was hurt. Like, I was crushed. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, you don't even know what I'm going to say. And she's like, yeah, but Joe, you're just so full of shit. You know? Like, you know, thank God for her, you know, because she cared more about saving my life than she did about hurting my pathetic little feelings. And it worked. Like, it hit me. Like, people had told me that before in my life, once, maybe twice. No, more than once or twice, right? But I had never heard it. And this time I heard it, and I was like, you're right. Like, if you want to know how to get sober, stay that way for 7.5 years, and be restless, irritable, discontent, burn your entire life to the ground, and hurt everybody you love, I'm your guy. Like, nobody can do it better, right? But if you want to know how to stay sober for good and all and live a life of happy,
joyous freedom? Like, I have no clue. I got no clue. So she told me to shut up, and I said, I did. I did, and everything changed. Like, it was another experience. I was running for rehab president at the time, you know? I was, and I bowed out of that, and it would come around to groups. We had like 10 groups, 100 groups a day, it felt like, and it would get around to me, and I had this great, wonderful nonsense to share, all theory, right? And it went from that to when she told me that, I would go through groups, and I would say, I'm Joe, I'm alcoholic, and I don't know. Where'd that come from? I got out of the treatment center. He told me, he said, Joe, I want you to, he said, you got your fourth and fifth DUI in the state of Oregon. I was like, yeah, I'm never going back, right? And he's like, how long do you think you can walk around with the fear of getting pulled over or getting caught and getting sent back for? How long do you think you can walk around with? And he wanted an answer. Like, it wasn't a rhetorical question. He wanted a time frame. He says, how long can you walk around with that fear eating you alive before you pick up a drink? It's like, once I did it for 7 years, you know. Many other times I did it for about 3 days. He's like, you got to go face those charges. And I said, okay, Fred, you know. And I said, but I got no money. I was thinking he was gonna say, oh, okay, you know, like, you're good now, you know. But he said, no. He said, you got to go to work. You got to save your money so you can fly to Oregon so you could go to jail. And I said, okay, Fred, and that's what I did. I saved up my money. I flew to Oregon. The judge took pity on me. He only gave me like 60 days. It was great. And I went into jail. I was already in my fourth step, so I found out that 93% of people that are behind bars are drug addict or alcoholic. So I started taking guys through the steps in jail. It was an awesome experience. Like, I was having fun in there. Like, I wanted to leave because my shoulder was hurting and the beds were not comfortable. But I was having a good time. I was having a good time, man. I got out of there. You know, I was 7.5 years sober. And I found out a lot of cool stuff. I found out that my sponsor, he told me a lot of other things, too. Like, we began going through the steps, but he would tell me, he would break them down for me, and he would explain to me things. Like, he said, like, for the first 6 months, he's like, Joe, you're really good at talking. You don't need any more practice. He's like, you suck at listening. And I was like, you're right, I never even really tried, you know, I don't know how to do it. And then, you know, explain to me, like, 93% of communication is nonverbal. So, like, it's body language and tone and stance and my eyes and, like, all that stuff. And I didn't know how to do any, I didn't know how to listen to any of that. I just take you on your word, you know, and a little bit of that. If she had sarcasm, I could tell, you know. But I didn't understand pain. I didn't understand, like, identification. I didn't understand how to love anybody or be tolerant. Like, I didn't know any of that. And I began to learn because I shut my mouth for a while. And what happened was, looking back on it, it's 2020. But, I'm going through the steps with him, and I'm practicing these things. I got to the third step. I remember, like, he said, you know, you have to be willing to give up everything. Like, everything that you knew, all your logic, all your, like, wisdom, all your experience, all of it brought you to a place where you want to die and say goodbye to your kids. Like, none of it works. None of it. Not my personality, not my sense of humor that I use to keep you at bay, right? All of that stuff had to go. And I said, okay. Like, I was that broken. I told them today. We were talking today. And I was like, man, thank God I was as beat up as I did, because I might not do this stuff as hard as I do it, and I wouldn't be getting the results that I'm getting, you know? I was 7.5 years sober. Not one single person ever asked me to sponsor them. It's because I had nothing anyone wanted. I had not my words, but the 93%, like the tone, the body language, the pain, that's what they were seeing. And they were like, huh. I'll take your car, right? I like your car, but I don't like anything else. I go through this thing, and I have this experience, and I do this with this honesty and this thoroughness and this sincerity, right? This sincerity. And people just start flocking to me, man. They start coming out of the woodwork asking for me to help them. And I call my sponsor, and I'm like, Fred, what do I do? And I was like on step four at the time when it started happening. He's like, Joe, you can't sponsor him. You're not on your ninth step yet. He said, but you can freely give them. You have a profound understanding of steps 1, 2, 3, and you're into 4. Give them that for free. Like, you don't have to take on the title of being their sponsor to do that. So I began to practice that. And I'm telling you, man, like I was taking everybody through step one. Like I was going through the toll booth. I was taking dogs and squirrels through step one. Like they would laugh at me, like, oh, here comes Joe. He's going to take someone through the first, you know, it's like. And I started to help open up because I was so blind to it. I didn't know that alcoholism is just two things. It's this mental obsession and this physical allergy. We all, like, spirituality varies. But a real compulsive gambler has the same spiritual sickness I do, right? An overeater, same thing. You know, it's human. Like, we all have that. But what we do have in common is this physical and this mental thing. So I began helping people, and they keep asking me, and I'm going through the work, and I'm having these experiences. You know, before I forget to mention, because sometimes I do, and it's really profound, is we're coming up on almost 4 years, and my brother, Enzo, he's healthy as an ox, still to this day. Like, he takes medicines that he got from Italy, but he's fine. Like, God could and would if he were sought, but you have to honestly seek him. It can't be no half-measure praying. And it's amazing. It's miraculous. I began working with guys, and I began having all sorts of really cool new experiences. I got so far out of myself through this work and through making amends that I'm actually able to really be of use to other human beings, man. And I can't get enough of it. Like, I cannot get it. I still can't to this day. Like Bill talks about, immediately that thought came in his head to how many other people he could help. Like, that's my experience. Like, I've been blind my whole life. Completely blind, walking around, dead asleep, living my life through your eyes. I've finally been awakened, and I can see for the first time ever. Like, I want everybody who is as blind as me, or even half as blind as me, to see. Like, I can't help but give that back. You know, and I began to create this fellowship I crave through sponsorship. And guys, like, I came over to thank you guys for coming tonight. You heard me speak way too many times. I was going to tell Michael's story tonight, but I don't know it well enough. But, like, even him, like, he's coming around. You know, it's really cool to watch him grow out of sponsoring him now. He's been struggling in and out. Now he's taking some actions, and he's, you know, having some experience. He asked me, he came up, he's been running around with us for like 2 years, and he said, Joe, I never heard you speak. I said, that's probably why he's not sober. Like, that's, no, I'm just kidding. And I was just, and I absolutely don't believe that, man. It was a funny, like, we get to have fun today. We get to joke around, man. I started with a buddy of mine, I started this group, The Way Out. What was going on was we were carrying this message, and a lot of people don't like to hear this message because it disturbs them. It makes them uncomfortable. And I get that, man. Like, if I was carrying this message and I was sitting in this room 10 years ago, which I could have very well been, I would have not wanted to hear this too. Because it requires work and action. And I'm a lazy American. Like, I don't want to do anything. I want to reap all the rewards, but I don't want to take any of the action. I don't want to tell you about the deep, dark, dirty stuff I did, you know? I don't want to go out and make financial amends. Like, I'll make amends, like, if she's cute, you know, like that. Like, that's who I was, you know? This guy, Steven, the kid's father, he actually, he wouldn't let them leave Oregon because he didn't want to be away from his kids, and whatever happened, you know, the first 3.5 years I was not with, or the first 3 years of my sobriety, I wasn't with my daughter, Skylar. She's 4 years old, and they were living over there in Oregon, and I was living here, and circumstances took place where he ended up losing his job. He's a doctor for Microsoft, like a computer, whatever, and he got a job for Apple, but it was in San Diego, so he had to move. So he couldn't keep the ex there with the kids. So they moved here, right? And I went from living with a couple of these guys, and we're just living, not single, but it was just four of us in a house and having fun and just kind of being that, like, single guy. And they moved in they moved to New Jersey in September. And I finally have my daughter back in my life. I finally have all my three kids in the same state, and it's awesome. Like, I've grown enough in Alcoholics Anonymous through the program and the fellowship, right, where I can actually be
a boyfriend. Like, I can actually be involved in a relationship. Like, I know it requires work, and I'm prepared and willing to do the work. And our relationship is going great. Like, we've been off and on for 6 years, but it's going awesome. He flew into town last week. We were going to speak at the Salvation Army at 8 o'clock in Newark. We, as a group, we have 27 outgoing commitments a month in treatment centers. We're out like 40 times a month with regular outspeaks and going speaking wherever the heck we go to speak, and plus the treatment centers. We're very involved in all three sides of the triangle. You know, we have the night watch coordinator is a member of our home group, the alternate coordinator. We have a general service representative. I'm going for DCM next month. They nominated me, so we're going to see if they're crazy enough to elect me. We have two treatment chairs for two different districts in our home group. We're trying to get the maximum experience of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? It's not, recovery is great, but it's just one side. You know, they got Unity, we got Service, and we're trying to have the full experience because we can. You know, there's a lot of low bottom drunks, a lot of people that were past gone in the fellowship of AA, and they didn't make it, and they come back in, and we're there to catch them. And we say, hey, come on, let's do this work. We're a little bit sicker than others, but we have a lot of fun. No, we really do. He came into town. I got to tell you this story. He came into town, and he was flying from San Diego to Israel on business, and he was going to stop in Newark, and he wanted to see the kids. And I said, and she was like, I don't know if I should let him. And I said, no, let him. I said, let me do it. You know, I'd made amends to him prior, like a verbal. I said, let me do it. So I worked real hard last Friday, and I got done early, and came home, took a shower, and I got the two kids, and they didn't know their dad was coming, and I'm like super excited inside, like they're going to get to see their dad, their dad's going to get to see the kids, like this is awesome, right? Who is this guy? Right? So I get the kids, I said, we got to go pick something up. They thought we were going to the supermarket or something. And I grab Danny on the way, and we get in the car, and we go, and we pull up to the gate in Newark, and the kids spot the dad. And they're like, yay! And I'm like, yeah! You know, like, this is awesome. And they go out running, and they hug them, and the kids are jumping up and down. Like, they're just so happy. And then I owe them money still for the you know, stabbing the tires in his car, you know, so I got out and I said, hey, Steven, here's some, I gave him a couple, you know, $150. I was like, here you go. And he's like, I can't take your money. I was like, it's not my money. It's your money. And he's like, oh, well, in that case, right? He took it, right? But it was, and you know, man, like he knows me from the past, like he knows all that stuff. And I've been sincere in my amends, man. And I, you know, a part of that amends was never to involve myself with a woman who's in a relationship, right? And I've been able to fairly, you know, I've been good with that since. And he's still, like, he's skeptical because he's like, how does this guy go from being this thug to, like, someone who just wants to feel? And I get it. Like, so would I be skeptical, you know? But I do it because I can. Like, just like I can help other alcoholics, I do it because I can. I was never able to do stuff like this before. As a result of this power and this program that led me to this power through sponsorship and this awesome fellowship, I'm able to be so free that I can actually help other people. I'm not trapped in myself. Like, it's cool. My relationships with my kids are awesome, man. Like, I love my home group. I think it's the greatest home group ever. Like, we're really involved. A buddy of mine went to Albany last week, and he spoke at some young people's convention. Like, we get to go there and, like, make fun of them. Like, you guys are crazy. They were jumping up on this chair. Like, it was really cool. But, I love I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, it's the most amazing thing that greatest thing since apple pie, man. I don't know. I love you guys, and thank you for letting me share.